Hello and welcome to another reading of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals. I'm Mike Eastland and we'll begin with a front page article from the Monday, April 18th edition of the Fairfield County Business Journal. Starting out with a couple of real estate stories, Connecticut single family inventory is down, but prices are up. The real estate firm Berkshire Hathaway Home Services New England, New York, and Hudson Valley Properties has issued a report analyzing the single-family house situation in Connecticut for the first quarter of 2022. The report concluded that total sales of single-family homes in the state decreased approximately 10% due to the lack of inventory. It said that several markets have seen price increases of more than 20% year over year, with Waterbury seeing price increase more than 40% since 2020. The report found that inventory in all entry-level categories across the state is very limited, with many homes receiving 20 to 30 offers. It said that the entry-level end of the market in the state generally is in the $300,000 to $400,000 bracket, but in the southeastern part of Connecticut, it generally starts at $1 million. The report said that most single-family homes are selling at fewer than 20 days on the market. It found that in the first quarter in Connecticut, there were 8,303 new listings and 6,682 total sales. It noted that in the first quarter of 2017, there had been a similar number of sales, 6,348, but back then new listings were dramatically higher at 13,482. Across all price points, if we had the inventory, we would sell it, said Candace Adams, president and CEO of BHHS. We anticipate the total sales in 2022 will look much like they did in 2019, a market that was widely considered to have been robust but balanced. The average single-family sale price in Greenwich during the first quarter of 2022 was $2.94 million, according to BHHS. In Westport, it was $2.24 million, while Darien recorded $2.1 million. The report suggested that prospective buyers in the entry-level market needed to consider looking at lower-priced properties so they'd be able to afford to make higher offers. For example, if $400,000 is what someone can afford, they should begin looking at homes in the 350 range and be prepared to overbid. The report found that even though COVID-19 restrictions have eased and New York City seems to be recovering, shoppers for second homes continue looking in the suburbs while simultaneously maintaining a presence in the city. BHHS expects that rising interest rates will impact the market, but will affect entry-level buyers more than other categories. The real challenge of this market is in the psychology of realizing that we are still in a very healthy market, Adams said. Last year, 2021, was so incredibly robust that even a very positive year wanes in comparison. We see tremendous ongoing interest in residential real estate, particularly single-family homes, so we are encouraging buyers to stay the course. In a related story, Norwalk debuts service to protect property owners from fraud. The Norwalk City government is now offering a free service to protect against property and mortgage fraud. The service will provide automated email alerts when a new document is recorded in the Norwalk Land Records matches their name. According to Town Clerk Richard McQuaid, the service will keep property owners immediately informed if someone is recording a fake deed or fake lien against them. In some instances, fraud on real property may not be discovered until the owners seek to sell the house, McQuaid said, who added that while this service can't prevent fraud, it's important to be notified as early as possible that someone may be trying to steal your property without your knowledge. In today's world, there is a growing threat of property fraud, and we want to help close those security gaps in our community in the best ways possible, added Mayor Rilling. People go to great lengths to protect their bank accounts from fraudulent access, and this service is another tool that can help protect Norwalk residents from fraud, McQuaid said. While this service can't prevent fraud, it's important to be notified as early as possible that someone may be trying to steal your property without your knowledge. As long as a document meets statutory recording guidelines, Connecticut law requires the town clerk's office to record the document. I am pleased that we can offer this new program to help our constituents detect information that may be fraudulent. In entertainment news, AMC Theaters buys Bowtie Cinemas' five Fairfield County venues. AMC Theaters has acquired 5 Fairfield County venues owned and operated by Bowtie Cinemas. The acquired properties include the Marquee 16 in Trumbull, the Royal 6 in Norwalk, the Sono 8 in Norwalk, the Majestic 6 in Stamford, and the Landmark 8 in Stamford. AMC also acquired Bowtie's venues in Sarasota Springs, New York, and Annapolis, Maryland. The financial terms of the transaction were not disclosed. Bowtie retained ownership of one Connecticut theater, the Criterion Cinemas in New Haven. AMC Chairman and CEO Adam Aaron noted his company is more than doubling our presence in Connecticut with the purchase of the Fairfield County Theaters. Next up, we have tips for getting a business loan from contributor Norman Grill. At some point in time, most small business owners will visit a bank or other lending institution to borrow money. Understanding what the lender wants and how to approach them properly can mean the difference between getting a loan or not. Understand the basic principles of banking. It's vital to present yourself as a trustworthy business person, dependable enough to repay borrowed money, and demonstrate that you understand the basic principles of banking. Your chances of receiving a loan will significantly improve if you can see your proposal through a banker's eyes and appreciate the position that they are coming from. Banks have a responsibility to government regulators, depositors, and the community in which they reside. While a bank's cautious perspective may be irritating to a small business owner, it is necessary to keep the depositor's money safe, the banking regulators happy, and the community's economic health sound. Each banking institution is different. Banks differ in the types of financing they make available, interest rates charged, willingness to accept risk, staff expertise, services offered, and their attitude towards small business loans. Selection of a bank is essentially limited to your choices from the local community. Typically, banks outside of your area of business are not as anxious to make loans to your firm because of the higher cost of checking credit and collecting the loan in the event of a default. Furthermore, a bank will typically not make business loans to any size business unless a checking account or money market account is maintained at that institution. Ultimately, your task is to find a business-oriented bank that will provide the financial assistance, expertise, and services your business requires now and is likely to require in the future. Build rapport. Building a favorable climate for a loan request should begin long before the funds are needed. The worst possible time to approach a new bank is when your business is in the throes of a financial crisis. Devote time and effort to building a background of information and goodwill with the bank you choose and get to know the loan officer you will be dealing with early on. Bankers are essentially conservative lenders with an overriding concern for minimizing risk. Logic dictates that this is best accompanied by limiting loans to businesses they know and trust. One way to build rapport and establish trust is to take out small loans, repay them on schedule, and meet all loan agreement requirements in both letter and spirit. By doing so, you gain the banker's trust and loyalty, and they will consider your business a valued customer and make it easier for you to obtain future financing. Provide the information your banker needs to lend you money. Understanding what information a loan officer seeks and providing it is the most effective approach to getting your loan. A sound loan proposal should contain information that expands on the following points. What is the specific purpose of the loan? Exactly how much money is required? What is the exact source of repayment for the loan? What evidence is available to substantiate the assumptions that the expected source of repayment is reliable? What alternative source of repayment is available if management's plans fail? What business or personal assets, or both, are available to collateralize the loan? And finally, what evidence is available to substantiate the competence and ability of the management team? Even a brief examination of these points suggests the need for you to do your homework before making a loan request, because an experienced loan officer will ask probing questions about each of them. Failure to anticipate these questions or providing unacceptable answers is damaging evidence that you may not completely understand the business or are incapable of planning for your firm's needs. Before applying for a loan, write a business plan. Your loan request should be based on and accompanied by a complete business plan. This document is the single most important planning activity that you can perform. A business plan is more than a device for getting financing. It is the vehicle that makes you examine, evaluate, and plan for all aspects of your business. A business plan's existence proves to your banker that you are doing all the right activities. Once you've put the plan together, write a 2-page executive summary. You'll need it if you are asked to send a quick write-up. Then, have an accountant prepare historical financial statements. You can't talk about the future without accounting for your past. Internally generated statements are fine, but your bank wants the comfort of knowing an independent expert has verified the information. Also, you must understand your statement and explain how your operation works and how your finances stand up to industry norms and standards. It is also crucial to line up references. Your banker may want to talk to your suppliers, customers, potential partners, or your team of professionals, among others. When a loan officer asks for permission to contact references, promptly answer with names and numbers. Don't leave them waiting for a week. Finally, it is important to seek advice from an experienced tax and accounting professional. Walking into a bank and talking to a loan officer is stressful for just about anyone. Preparation for and a thorough understanding of this evaluation process is essential to minimize the stressful variables and optimize your potential to qualify for the funding you seek. On a lighter note, Rataberger Group USA debuts 2 German beer imports. Rataberger Group USA, the Norwalk-based importer of German beer, will be rolling out 2 new products, Schafferhofer Juicy Pineapple and Schafferhofer Wild Cherry. According to the company, Schafferhofer Juicy Pineapple is the latest addition to the portfolio of award-winning German wheat beers, which includes grapefruit, pomegranate, and passion fruit. The beverage mixes unfiltered German Hefeweizen beer with 50% pineapple juice and will be available in 11.2-ounce bottles sold in 6-packs and cases and also in kegs. Schafferhofer Wild Cherry blends cherry juice and German wheat beer and packaged within the brand's first-ever variety pack. The Schafferhofer Happy Pack will feature 3 each of Schafferhofer Wild Cherry, grapefruit, pomegranate, and passion fruit, all in 11.2-ounce cans. We listened closely to our customers and did extensive research to see what was missing in the market and how we might be able to fill that void, said David Duser, CEO of Sales and Marketing at Rataberger Group USA. Moving on to Westchester County news, and starting out with real estate like we did in Fairfield, high-value residential sales are down in the first quarter, but prices are still going up. The number of residences sold in the Hudson Valley dropped during the first quarter of 2022, while prices continued their upward spiral, according to the Hudson Gateway Association of Realtors. The organization, which draws data on its OneKey MLS multiple listing service, reported a 6.3% drop in sales of single-family homes, condominiums, co-ops, and 2-4 multifamily homes in Westchester. There were drops elsewhere, with overall sales down 11.6% in Rockland, 28.1% in Putnam, 14.7% in Orange, and 19.8% in Sullivan. The inventory continues to be tight, especially in Westchester, where 26.5% fewer single-family homes, 33 1/3 fewer condos, and 20.7% fewer co-ops were available in the first quarter of 2022 than were on the market in the fourth quarter of 2021. The number of 2-4 family properties for sale in Westchester rose 17.9% from 134 in the fourth quarter of last year to 158 in the first quarter of 2022. At the end of the first quarter of this year, there also were 864 single-family homes, 238 condos, and 665 co-ops listed for sale. The median sale price for single-family homes in Westchester rose by only 2.7% to $729,000 in the first quarter of 2022, compared with $710,000 during the fourth quarter of 2021. Condominiums saw an 18.7% median price jump to $445,000 in the first quarter, up from $375,000 in the final quarter of 2021. Co-ops experienced a slight shrinkage of median pricing, losing 1.4% to stand at $189,880 compared with $192,500 in last year's fourth quarter. The median sale price of 2-4 family homes rose 11.6% to $697,500 in the first quarter of 2022 from $625,000 in the previous quarter. The median sale price of a single-family home in Putnam went up 21.8%. It stood at $475,038 compared with $390,000 in the previous quarter. The median price for condos was up 3.2% at $264,950 compared with $256,750. And the one co-op that sold in Putnam in the first quarter of 2022 went for $165,000. The single-family median sale price in Rockland went up 14.9% in the first quarter of 2022 to reach $600,000 compared with $522,000 in the previous quarter. Condo prices were relatively steady, with the median rising only 0.6% to $289,250, up from $287,500 previously. The median co-op price hit $100,000, an increase of 12.7% from $88,725,000 previously. A dearth of inventory continues to plague the market in all parts of One Key's footprint, and days on the market continues to decline, HGAR said. The market is also facing the dual headwinds, rising interest rates and increasing inflation. However, the market continues to have evident strength in spite of these headwinds as the economy in the Hudson Valley and greater New York City and suburban area continues to rebound from the pandemic. All in all, 2022 is off to a solid start. In New York economic news, New York State to put $150 million into massive Mount Vernon infrastructure fix. New York's Governor Kathy Hochul joined with Westchester County, Mount Vernon, and state officials April 15th at the Mount Vernon City Hall to announce a $150 million state investment and three-way partnership to fix long-standing sewer and water infrastructure problems in the city. It is expected that most of the work will take from 5 to 7 years to complete after a comprehensive assessment is finished. However, some projects will be launched immediately, including the $7 million 3rd Street Sewer Project, designed to ensure reliable sewer service for about 500 homes that experienced sewage backups and now are served by a makeshift system using temporary pumps. In too many communities of color like Mount Vernon, critical water infrastructure has been left to fall into disrepair. But today we are setting an example for the nation by advancing environmental justice, improving quality of life for residents, and addressing decades of disinvestment, Hochul said. When I met with Mayor Patterson Howard and heard about the seriousness of this crisis in her city, I immediately directed my administration to coordinate with the city and the county and right this systemic wrong. Hochul, Patterson Howard, and Westchester County Executive George Latimer signed a memorandum of understanding that outlines the partnership among state, city, and county. Latimer said the significant investment in Mount Vernon's aging sewer and wastewater infrastructure is absolutely necessary as thousands of homeowners are directly suffering from sewage backup problems and related health issues, and sewage flooding is inevitably making its way into the nearby Hutchinson and Bronx rivers. Mount Vernon's pipes are old, corroded, and overburdened, and I am eager to begin this three-way partnership between the state, the county, and the city to fix it. Patterson Howard said, "Rebuilding our infrastructure is critical to the economic, social, and physical health of the community." Assemblymember J. Gary Pretlow was among those attending, and he pointed out, "With storm flooding and sewage overflow that have been plaguing many of our city homes for so long, this partnership will alleviate the financial challenges our city has been facing to maintain, repair, and replace aging infrastructure." The MOU defines the priority projects and outlined roles, responsibilities, and available funding for the effort. The memo formalizes the three-way partnership between the City of Mount Vernon, Westchester County, and the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. The state will provide $1 million to fund a survey of lead water pipes in Mount Vernon and to develop a replacement plan. The governor's Office of Storm Recovery is committing to start a $3 million pilot program to mitigate environmental hazards and make upgrades to private property. Participating homes will be eligible for rehabilitation of damaged pipes, replacement of lead service lines, and other needed environmental remediation. Some projects that are handled under the partnership also will help Mount Vernon fulfill its obligations under a federal consent decree to take care of longstanding violations of the Clean Water Act. In other economic development news, licenses issued for marijuana growers in Hudson Valley. The first 52 licenses for growers of adult-use marijuana issued by the New York State Cannabis Control Board were announced on April 14th by Governor Kathy Hochul, and they include licenses to grow cannabis in the Hudson Valley. The first round of approved licenses came from a pool of more than 150 requests that were submitted to the Office of Cannabis Management. The OCM will continue to review applications. New York's farms have been the backbone of our state's economy since before the American Revolution, and now New York's farms will be at the center of the most equitable cannabis industry in the nation, Hochul said. I'm proud to announce the first adult-use cannabis cultivation licenses in the state, and I'm proud of the work the Office of Cannabis Management and the Cannabis Control Board are doing to get adult-use cannabis sales up and running as fast as possible, without compromising our mission to uplift communities and individuals most impacted by the past century of cannabis prohibition. In Dutchess County, licenses were awarded to Lunel Lada LLC, Passion Field Farm LLC, The Hemp Division Incorporated, Spada Farm LLC, Hudson River Hemp LLC, and Clear Natural LLC. In Ulster County, licenses were awarded to Oak Queens LLC and Herd Farm LLC. In Orange County, licenses were awarded to Twin Arch Farm LLC and Chickadoo LLC. And in Sullivan County, licenses were awarded to HR Botanicals LLC and Hemp Industry Consultants Incorporated. Further to the north in Columbia County, Fatnell LLC, Eterna Cannabis LLC, and Claverack Farm LLC received licenses. There were no licenses issued for Westchester, Putnam, Rockland, New York City, or Nassau. Three growing licenses were issued for Suffolk County, going to East End Flower Farm Limited, Plant Connection Incorporated, and Route 27 Hop Yard LLC. While the licenses allow growing of marijuana to be sold for recreational use, Office of Cannabis Management Executive Director Chris Alexander noted, "We are working hard to provide a legal framework for New Yorkers using medical cannabis to grow their own cannabis plants. We understand that patients are looking to this new option to access medication at a low cost, and we are doing everything possible to speed up this process while working within the rules of the New York's regulatory system." A couple of quick business briefs. Enterprise Truck Rental opens first Westchester location. Enterprise Truck Rental has opened its first Westchester location at 770 South Columbus Avenue in Mount Vernon. The new branch will serve the entire Westchester County and the Bronx with truck rental solutions including cargo vans, box trucks, and tow-capable pickup trucks for both business and personal use. The Mount Vernon location will have a three-person staff consisting of a branch manager, senior account specialist, and vehicle service attendant. Prior to the branch's opening, Westchester customers are served by Enterprise Truck Rental locations in Stamford and Queens. MasterCard partners on crypto-backed payment card. Purchase-headquartered MasterCard has partnered with Lithuanian-based cryptocurrency lender Nexo on what the companies are promoting as the world's first payment card backed by digital assets. According to a press statement from the companies, the new card is linked to a Nexo-provided crypto-backed credit line that starts and stays at 0% APR. Cardholders can use their digital assets as collateral rather than selling them, and multiple assets can be used as collateral, including Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Tether. The card will be rolled out in several European countries by DiePocket, Nexo's card issuer. No date has been set for a U.S. release. MasterCard believes that digital assets are revolutionizing the financial landscape, and we are leading in innovation with programs like our partnership with Nexo to deliver people new and one-of-a-kind choices in how they pay and activate their crypto holdings, said Ray Damanaran, MasterCard's head of crypto and blockchain products and partnerships. We're excited to continue to innovate in payments by making digital assets more accessible across the ecosystem. And finally, mark your calendars. Less than 1 month until New York's law requiring notice of electronic monitoring of employees goes into effect. New York entities have 1 month to prepare required notices to employees for certain types of electronic monitoring. On November 8, 2021, Governor Hochul signed into law an amendment to the New York Civil Rights Law that requires any private individual or entity with a place of business in the state to provide notice to employees for certain types of electronic monitoring. The law goes into effect on May 7, 2022, pushing employers to determine the scope of their electronic monitoring activities and begin updating their policies and issuing notices to ensure compliance with the new law's requirements prior to its effective date. The law applies broadly to telephone conversations or transmissions, electronic mail or transmissions, or internet access or usage of or by an employee by any electronic device or system, including but not limited to the use of a computer, telephone, wire, radio, or electromagnetic, photoelectronic, or photo-optical systems. Employers that monitor or otherwise intercept their employees' telephone calls, email, or internet access or usages defined under the law must provide written notice to all employees upon hiring and post a notice of electronic monitoring in a conspicuous place which is readily available for viewing by affected employees. The law requires that the written notice advise employees that any and all telephone conversations or transmissions, electronic mail or transmissions, or internet access or usage by an employee by any electronic device or system, including but not limited to the use of a computer, telephone, wire, radio, or electromagnetic, photoelectronic, or photo-optical systems, may be subject to monitoring at any and all times by any lawful means. The law further requires that employees acknowledge receipt of this notice either in writing or electronically. Employers should develop a process for ensuring all designated employees receive and acknowledge the notice of electronic monitoring during the onboarding process. Employers may even want to consider going beyond the minimum requirements of the law by including a reference to electronic monitoring in its employee handbooks and other relevant policies to notify employees that electronic monitoring is occurring and help establish a defense that employees had adequate notice of monitoring. In the contents of data privacy, New York's new electronic monitoring law is yet another example of state legislation enacted to increase transparency and promote data privacy. The law seeks to strike a delicate balance between an employee's right to privacy and an employer's right to monitor employee activities. As a result, employees in New York will now be explicitly notified if their employers are electronically monitoring telephone conversations, emails, and internet usage. Again, New York entities should act now to implement the required notices and acknowledgments prior to the May 7, 2022 effective date. And that's all we have time for today. I'm Mike Eastland, and I've been reading from the Monday, April 18th editions of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals.